Welcome back to Making an Artist. I'm your host, Shanna Shrum, creator, coach, and pottier. Before we get started, first, some potty business. Discounted registration for the spring session of Forward, the online creative coaching group I facilitate, is open. To keep it accessible, there are microfinancing plans starting at $27.50 a week. Visit lifeofthepotty.com/forward registration to learn more and register. 86 April babes, we're emerging October 15th through the 18th, 2020. Same gorgeous spot in Three Oaks, Michigan, same amazing facilitation team, 100% less social distancing. Visit emergeretreat2020.com to check out payment plans and register. Now, if you need some creative fun, look no further than next Wednesday, April 1st, when I'll be hosting Potty Power Hour, an online creative salon at 7 p.m. Central. All creative mediums are welcome, and the cost is pay what you can to participate. That's right, if you've just been laid off, come for free. I'm serious. Let's have fun and play. Visit lifeofthepotty.com/events to register. On today's episode, we have activist and storyteller Rebecca Kling. Due to the coronavirus, we had to record remotely on Zoom, so pardon the audio quality. But despite the distance, the conversation did not suffer. In it, we talk about cultivating empathy, the bogusness of the 40-hour work week, infusing play into protest, and Rebecca gives the first ever live performance on Making an Artist. Enjoy.
All right. We're officially recording now. hello, Rebecca. Thank you so much for meeting me on the internet today.
I'm sad that we couldn't make it work when I was in Chicago. And also, there's a global pandemic.
Yeah, so that's why we're talking, and that's why the audio sounds different for those of you listening. We are talking through Zoom. Please sponsor Making an Artist podcast now. Yes. And we were supposed to talk last week, but things were so like happening really quickly. And it sounded like you, because you have a day job.
I do have a day job. So I work with the Sierra Club, which is an environmental organization.
We love the environment here.
25 years old. I'm a fan of the environment. Yeah. I should explicitly say that the views that I express on this podcast are my own.
Okay.
I'm speaking for my employer today. And yes, that is what I have to say about that.
Great. And so I always let my guests introduce themselves and tell me and whoever is listening what it is that they do and what type of artistry they create, what their mediums are. So why don't you tell everybody at home, and they are at home because everyone's social distancing and doing their best to flatten the curve, who you are and what it is that you do.
Yeah, so I'm Rebecca Kling. I use she, her pronouns, and I am a storyteller.
Yes.
Storytelling is sort of my first artistic love. It was the first art form that I really felt comfortable in and is the one I've certainly been involved in for the longest. That's taken me through a lot of different things. So I've done that professionally as a primary source of income for a time, which is how we met on the Fringe Festival circuit.
That's right. Back in the day, road tripping.
Oh, the Fringe Festival. I mostly miss, like, there's some stuff that I'm super excited, like sleeping in my own bed and in hotel rooms when I'm on the road and not at, like, random people's couches.
Real, random people. Like, when we're talking random, like, the people that host Fringe Festival artists are, first of all, open-hearted, very people. Kind. Lovely, but definitely a little quirky.
Yes. And some of the best theater I've ever seen is at Fringe Festivals, and some of the worst theater I've ever seen.
I 1,000% support and agree with that statement. Literally some of the most amazing shows I've ever seen, and some of the literal terriblest shows ever. But that's what makes the world go around in the arts.
That is true. And for a number of years, I was doing performance work as a primary source of income, both through fringe festivals, through conferences. A lot of the work that I've done, most of the work that I've done, is about my own identity as a transgender person. Mm-hmm. And worked at colleges and universities as a consultant or as a guest performer. my cats have decided to.
That's okay. We love pussies here at the podcast.
I wouldn't have it any other way.
Right?
And a little over 4 years now, I've been in Washington, D.C. I moved out here to take a full-time job doing transgender advocacy and helping trans folks and allies tell their own stories. We know, and it sort of makes intuitive sense that, like, if you know someone's story, it's harder to be a jerk to them.
100%, yes.
Sadly, it is not a guarantee, but, like, we know, and there's data, there's surveys, there's research.
Right.
If you know an out LGBT person, you're more likely to support LGBT rights.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked with trans folks and allies around the country to help them do that, to help them share their stories.
It kind of sounds like cultivating empathy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A really good way of thinking about it.
Yeah. I think that is so much at the root of so much creation and so much art. And that is deeply what the world needs, because empathy is also an access point to compassion.
Absolutely.
And when we have empathy and compassion for each other, guess what we do? We take care of each other.
And we need that so much right now.
Oh my God, so much.
Everyone is out of toilet paper. And
oh honey, are you okay? Do you need me to send you a roll?
I've been one of the few things I can claim, like, hipster status I like to I've been pro bidet.
Oh,
totally on pro bidet camp. And as someone with IBS, with irritable bowel syndrome.
Oh yeah, honey.
Anything I can do to make that process easier.
Uh-huh.
Like, I got my squatty potty. I got a bidet.
Oh my God, you are set.
Yeah, it's good. And then for the last year or so, I've been with the Sierra Club in the communications department. I work with the Beyond Coal campaign,
mm-hmm.
which works to end the use of coal power in the United States.
We love that.
And doing communication work there, helping talk about those issues and helping empower community advocates. And some of that was working full-time in trans advocacy was both professionally and artistically draining as hell.
Mm.
That from a personal standpoint, I didn't feel like I had a lot left in me at the end of the day to write or to perform. And from a artistic standpoint, it sort of felt like I was using all of that energy or all of that juice mm-hmm. to work with the people I was working with in my day job.
Okay.
And now that I'm about a year out from that and feeling a little less raw
yeah.
from that experience, which, don't get me wrong, I'm so proud of the work that we did there and glad that I had those experiences. And also it was draining as hell.
What specifically was draining about it?
Some of it was the structure of more traditional 9-to-5 jobs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things I saw on Twitter, which I liked recently, was, so most of the jobs that we've been told can't be done remotely, that was a lie.
Right. We are learning about, a lot of lies are getting cracked open right now.
And some of it was definitely the structure of working a 9-to-5, of being in a place at a certain time, Monday through Friday.
That's tough for artists.
Yes. And there was some stuff that would probably be true at any job, and some stuff that there were ways that job was structured that I think were unnecessarily
mm-hmm.
frustrating in terms of push back against remote work or push back against flex schedules mm-hmm. or
it's rigid. Sounds rigid.
Yeah.
And I think, and you know, honestly, I say that it's hard for artists or creators to be 9-to-5ers, but I actually think it's hard for a lot of people because we're not all meant to like wake up at 7 and like go to be at work by 9 and then turn it off at 5 and go home. Like everybody has this like natural rhythm. And I especially think creativity has its own rhythm. And so when you're like not paying attention to that because the powers that be don't allow you to, that can really drain the shit out of you.
And like, that structure has nothing to do with how the best way to do the work is.
Right.
Like, the 8-hour workday isn't because
it's bogus.
Scientists sitting down and saying this is the best way to be productive. It's certainly not because, you know, a deity from on high said thou shalt work 40 hours work week. Like all of these structures.
No, it was because Henry Ford, P.S., known anti-Semite, was like, oh, my workers don't have enough time to spend money, so let me give them an 8-hour work day. I mean, that's like the gist of the story. It wasn't, like you said, it wasn't rooted in research. It's not like this is the optimal amount of time that people need to work. There's research out there that says that most people who work office jobs only work somewhere around like 3 full hours a day.
Yeah. We all know that.
We all know that in our souls.
And some of that drain was from that. Mm-hmm. And then some of it was my job was I'm going to start that thought over. Mm-hmm. Broadly, the job that I had when working full-time with trans advocacy was to help trans folks and allies, often family members, but not always, tell their own stories. Mm. So that might be working with someone who is going to testify in front of the Texas legislature about why trans rights are important. That might be working with a group of parents who were going to go to a school district meeting in Alabama about why protecting trans youth was important. That might be working with a trans person in who really wants to share her own story of discrimination and wants to have that voice and that empowerment. And that type of work in terms of providing people with a platform and with the tools to speak for themselves, amazing. I still get chills at some of the work that I was able to do of giving people the tools they needed to advocate for themselves.
Right, because it's completely empowering somebody. Like when you can own your own story and tell it on a platform in front of people, like that's transformational.
Yeah.
Regardless of the outcome too, right? Of what happens in whatever situation that they're in, they get to walk away knowing that they own their story.
Right.
And that's fucking beautiful.
That they have these tools now of advocating for themselves. You know, I feel very strongly there's no one right way to tell a story. Mm-hmm. There's no one right way to advocate. I wanted to share the tools that I had learned in terms of narrative and metaphor and connecting with an audience and performance and all of those things that can help many people advocate, even if I would never say they're one size fits all for everyone. Mm-hmm. However, a lot of that in practice and in the day-to-day was almost like case management or social work.
Oh, right.
I was asking from people and getting from people what experiences of discrimination they had had.
Oh, so you are like, I would think that maybe going into this position, you would have not had the concept of like, I'm going to have to help carry this weight for people. Right. And so that is like a side effect of this beautiful work, this important work. But I would also guess that maybe you didn't have the support system you needed in order to help manage carrying all this.
In part because none of us, my colleagues and bosses included, realized that that's what the position was going to be. It was a new position that was from new funding. Every nonprofit and every advocacy organization in the world can tell you that stories are important. Very, very few of them, although it's more and more, have the resources to really devote time and staff to it. Right. You know, a lot of the time it's, oh shoot, we have a funders meeting, we need to get someone's story that we can share with our funders, or oh shoot, we have our annual appeal letter, we need to include someone's photo and story in that. And this was a real gift at this organization of the resources for myself as a full-time staffer and some support in terms of travel, in terms of compensation for the people we worked with. But what we all learned was the emotional weight of all of it.
Emotional labor.
Yes.
100%.
And I learned about myself that...
Oh, I bet you did.
that at the end of the day, I have a hard time putting that down. You know, you talked about carrying that weight, mm-hmm. that hearing someone's story of discrimination or of their child's pain or of, mm. in some cases, their child's death, in some cases from suicide,
yeah.
that was difficult and in some cases not possible to put down at the end of the day.
And I'm sure incredibly triggering. I mean, what we're talking about is like digesting other people's trauma and helping them sculpt a story from it.
And I moved to Washington, D.C. in March of 2016.
Oh, God.
We were literally going to events at the White House.
Oh, my God.
And having trans forums in the Eisenhower office building and, you know, getting tickets to the Easter egg roll and having rainbow lights lit up on the White House in Pride Month.
Oh my God.
To a slightly different tenor.
That's an understatement.
Under the current dipshit administration.
Oh my God. I'm like massaging my face from the stress of that sounds so stressful. I'm so sorry you had to experience that.
Hi, do you like what you're hearing? If so, swing on by patreon.com/lifeofthepotty and become a patron. This is a listener-supported podcast, so any amount you can support making an artist with is enough and greatly appreciated. If you can't become a patron right now, please rate, review, and share your favorite episodes so we can keep the conversation going. Thank you, and potty.
So to go back to, okay, we met touring. You and I both had solo shows. Back in the 2012?
That sounds right. A million years ago.
155,000 years ago, for those who are counting. And so you've done, what, 2-3 solo shows?
I had done 4 or 5 by the time I moved to D.C.
Look at you. So have you performed since you've been in D.C.?
Yes, but not consistently. Mm-hmm. There's Story District, which is a DC storytelling organization, and I've done their Pride show once. I've done smaller things like emceeing for a fundraiser, which involves some performance and mm-hmm. some crowd schmoozing.
We love a schmooze.
I've done some silly creative stuff with some friends who were, you know, brainstorming about protest, which I do think is an interesting and underutilized artistic expression.
Ooh, yeah. Tell us more about that.
One of the things that is both amazing and horrible about being in D.C.
I love amazing and horrible because they exist in everything we do.
Constantly protests going on. And they're very accessible. You know, I have been able to, particularly now at the Sierra Club, which is a little closer to the Capitol building, I've been able to walk from work to protests at the White House.
We love an accessible protest. We love like just wearing your like Payless shoes, just like
exactly. I think about, you know, one of the sort of myths of my family or the like stories that I grew up on is my dad and his sister, my aunt, leaving Chicago in the dark to take a bus to DC to see Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech, and then immediately getting on a bus and going back to Chicago and arriving back in the dark. Mm-hmm. And I'm able to walk to the Lincoln Memorial. I mean, from my house, it would be a schlep, but
you can do it. Yeah.
It's certainly only a couple train stops away. And that lowers the bar of participation in a way that's really great.
Right.
Because it's not, can I get to DC to participate in this thing? It's like, can I block off a Saturday afternoon and bike down there?
Right.
What I do wonder or hope is that there are ways, you know, I think about Saul Alinsky saying that protest should be fun, and like advocacy and activism should have elements of fun in them. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I think I wish I saw more of. And sometimes it's because there's just not time. Like there's
right, because things happen really fast.
Yeah. Sometimes it's because it's not clear who is organizing something and you don't want to step on someone else's toes.
Oh, so there's like a politeness factor.
Well, yeah, I don't want to show up and overpower someone else's event or, you know, show up with a megaphone and start chanting something that another group doesn't want or feels like isn't what their messaging is. And then there's also just bits and pieces of things that I've seen that I really wish I had had the capacity over the last 4 years to explore more in my time here. So things like the projections that have been done.
Those are cool.
About releasing people in detention around the, my cat just jumped on the table.
Listen, I love, is it Meep or Moop or what?
This one is Meep.
Hi Meep. I love you.
So there was just one recently projecting about releasing people from detention and imprisonment around the coronavirus, because very quickly that's going to become an
issue. Yeah.
Yet a new public health crisis.
Right.
I know we projected at the organization I was at messages about trans rights on Trump Hotel in D.C. and I know that the person who has that set up with that projector has done a number of things like that. So that is certainly art and performance.
100%.
I'm sitting, you know, in my kitchen, and there are three paper and cardboard birds that say liberation, keep loving, and resist, that are from the J20 protests, the inauguration protests in 2017. And that was certainly art that was, you know, they were on big cardboard tubes that people were waving.
Yeah, I mean, I love that intersection of art and play and fun, and but activism and saying something important, because I think kind of also too, like if you don't infuse the activism with a sense of, with any type of fun at all, it's really easy to get burnt out.
And absolutely. And some of the things that I've participated in were coming directly from that. So I was at a dance protest.
What? Can you come to Chicago and have one here?
Absolutely. I don't want to. So there was a dance protest where they had, DC apparently does not screw around with litter laws.
Oh,
so they
okay.
had biodegradable flutter paper.
Oh, smart.
That if you use confetti or glitter, the DC police will fine you.
They'll come get you. Okay.
I'm okay with, like, those are not environmentally friendly.
Yes.
So there was a dance protest with, you know, a amplified sound and a bunch of people in booty shorts.
Yes, we love a booty short and a resist.
Out of, you know, some idiot politician who had said something horrible about
it. Yeah.
There was a protest that a number of Jewish activists organized that was yelling curses in Yiddish.
Oh, I love it.
Again, was doing what we were considering anti-Semitic things, and it was then an online argument of, well, can you be anti-Semitic if you're a Jew? And like, yes, and we're gonna go throw Yiddish curses at this idiot.
That is amazing and hilarious, and what a delight.
And exactly, and those are the types of things that I'm sure came from like really delightful brainstorming and collaborative processes that I bet looked very, very similar to any of the collaborative processes that you or I have worked on from
100%. And the thing that I like about that is it's because there's this anger, right? Because the reason that I feel like the root source sometimes of protest is anger, but you cannot live on anger alone, right? Because you will literally just dissolve into pieces. At least I would. Yeah. I can't be angry all the time. I can't keep my focus that way. But this is a really nice way to still have the message get out and stand your ground and speak your piece, but also with a sense of like cleverness and play, creativity, and like, oh.
What are you more likely to read about on Facebook or share with friends?
1,000%.
Another protest where someone's saying, hey, hey, ho, ho, Trump has got to go.
Yeah, like we know that. Yeah.
English cursing or whatever the thing
yeah.
is. Although it is
theater. I mean, and also protesting is a form of theater.
Yes.
100%. Yeah.
The protest chant that I did learn this past year that I really loved was a call and response, like so many are.
I love a call and response. It's like going to church, but better.
What you really want justice. Tell me what you need, what you really need. Justice. How are we going to get it? People power.
Oh, that's cute.
Or, you know, women power.
Yeah.
POC power, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And I liked the, like, what's the rhythm, the rhythmic term, the like syncopation.
Tell me
what you want, what you really want. Justice.
Yeah. It also harkens and brings up a little bit of Spice Girls for me. And exactly. I like that.
And then like, again, that's going to be so much more catchy than something that,
yeah.
You know, we're here, we're queer, is important, and yeah. also something that for many, many people is familiar.
Right, right. So so I know that you are working now at the Sierra Club, you've got your energies back. So what's next creatively for you?
I've started writing again, just sort of personal narrative. Most of the work that I did before I moved to DC was about my own experiences as a trans person and trying to at least return to that energy as a place that I'm familiar with and that I certainly feel like being in DC and having traveled in part from the work that I've done in DC has given me a lot of things to talk about and think about and share.
Oh, I bet.
To use that as a way to sort of safely ease into the pool. And I'm not sure totally where those are going to end up, if they're going to end up being shared publicly at all. I've been,
sure.
you know, I, like every other person of my age cohort, has been thinking about starting a podcast.
Of course. And, you're on one right now.
I think it's the new version of like, let's get together and start a bar.
Yeah, which I still support that.
So I've thought about that or about doing some sort of salon night at my apartment or at a friend's place. I love seeing all of the digital art sharing that's happening during the coronavirus pandemic.
Yeah. Yeah.
And have thought about trying to organize sort of a community variety show that's like the people that I would physically have hung out with and done something in person.
100%.
Just all of us in our home spaces.
I think what's like, what's really interesting, and if there is a silver lining to any of all that's happening, is that we are seeing people get really creative right now.
Yeah. Creative virus cabaret. There was all of the sharing of the high school musical videos that had been canceled.
Yes.
There was the, you know, the Broadway shows that through Broadway HD or whatever their online platform is, were being posted for free. There are all of the museums that are doing things. There are all
And what it's really creating is accessibility.
Yeah.
I mean, because from what I'm seeing is like the price points to watch and view these things are really low or zero.
And I think that again goes to, and this was another thing I saw on Twitter that I'm going to fail to credit the specific person, but at least won't pretend it's an original thought of mine.
Yes, I appreciate that. It's very integral. It's a lot of integrity.
In the same way that we now know that a bunch of these jobs that they said couldn't be done remote can absolutely be done remote.
Mm-hmm.
We also are learning that a bunch of the things they said couldn't have remote access for people with disabilities or accessibility.
Right.
Absolutely can.
Right. And
and without Without naming names, I have seen organizations that I like and respect that I know because of cost or because of legacy in a particular location, mm-hmm. had spaces that like had stairs and no elevators, that are experimenting with doing video stuff that's being shared over the internet in a way that I don't think they were before. And they're not doing it because of accessibility needs, other than in the literal sense of like, we're all in our homes.
Right.
But has the impact of people who couldn't handle those stairs can now see versions of those shows that they couldn't before.
Yeah. And I think we're going to be discovering, like, well, it's not a small thing. It's actually a very big thing. We're going to be discovering things like that as we continue through this. Speaking of, so I'm interested in how everybody's coping and like how, like what are like their little tips and tricks, like as far as like.
I feel very lucky in the place that I'm in DC. There is the tub that is deep enough for me to have my knees and shoulders underwater at the same time.
I have been living inside of my bathtub the past 2 weeks. It's my favorite place right now.
I outgrew sort of typical tubs in that either my like waist and chest was out of the water.
Oh, like those little tiny ones that are like the little plasticky tubs that you get in a hotel room at like a Holiday Inn.
Yeah,
fuck that tub. That's not the kind of tub I got. I got a deep ass tub.
3.5 inches of water.
Yeah, no, nobody likes that tub but a baby.
So I'm super spoiled by the tub here. I mean, I smoke a lot of weed.
Yes.
So bubble baths, weed. My cats are just the friggin' best. Mm-hmm. And then finding as much connection as I can. And then just video chats way, way, way more than I have been.
Oh, my God.
Again, I like the Sierra Club and the sort of attitude. They're doing communications team happy hour. We now have a standing meeting 4 p.m. every Friday.
Love.
As a video chat.
Uh-huh.
I've been trying to, when I was in Chicago, I played some piano with my dad.
Oh, yeah. Malaga,
and I've been trying to play more while I've been back.
Have you ever tried incorporating music into your performance?
A little bit. And I'll do a couple of the shows I've had have had like a couple bars of a silly song or something.
Mm-hmm.
I am very comfortable speaking in front of an audience. I'm very scared of singing in front of an audience.
Oh.
I don't know. I think it's something that I've talked a number of times about exploring and then have backed away from. I will say I also work with a summer camp, and one of the highlights of my year is writing camp-themed parody songs.
Oh, I feel like we should have a night of song with you on the internet.
That would be so much fun.
I mean, come on, give it to the people.
Well, I actually, if you would like a exclusive.
I love an exclusive. I'm a hard-hitting podcast journalist.
Let me pull up. What did I just
see? And this would never happen in a recording, in a live recording here in my house. This is only available to us because we are online and you're just like pulling it up.
So today, while totally paying attention to a call that I was on.
That's the other thing too, is people can really do 80-20 right now. They can give themselves 80 and their company's 20.
No.
Because they're like, I'm just going to press mute and I'm going to write my great American novel.
Right.
While I'm on this conference call.
So actually, this is not the great American novel. It is the coronavirus themed Brady Bunch parody.
Oh, no.
Here's a story. A virus unseen. A pandemic that encompassed the whole world. Doctors said stay home. Keep social distance. But much fake news still swirled.
Whoop.
It's the story of an absent vaccine, countries scrambling with sick folks of their own, and the virus spread with grim persistence. More and more worked from home, till the one day when the system cracked wide open, empty shelves, empty stores, all out of beans. Workers realized that they all must band together in solidarity against COVID-19. 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 In solidarity against COVID-19. Da 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 da.
Rebecca. Can we? Oh my God, you have to.
So that's a thing that happened.
See, look at the creativity that this, I, because it's like, it's hard to hold the good with how horrible this all is, right? So you feel like you have to, like, it's like, you don't want to, like, experience too much joy or goodness almost during this time. But I also think, and I kind of to go back on, like, I can't just, like, live on my anger. I also can't just, like, live on the sadness and the terribleness of this virus either, right? But I really enjoyed that. Thank you for sharing. That is, I think, our first live performance on Making an Artist. So I appreciate that. One other thing.
Really, it's generous to call that performance.
I'll call it what I want.
Like puns, limericks, parody songs.
Yes. High quality comedy.
Want more potty in your life? Head on over to lifeofthepotty.com and sign up to receive the Potty Report. It's a super fun newsletter that will keep you knee deep in potty knowledge and goings on. We've always got fun things in the works, and you're invited to all of it.
So, okay, one thing I was wondering about while you were talking earlier is, how do you, like, does an idea for a show just hit you? Is it something that you, like, develop over a period of time? Like, what's a little bit of your process around that? Do you have a daily practice?
I did once upon a time. Mm-hmm. There was a good period where I was writing consistently and where I was meditating more often than not.
Mm-hmm. We love a meditation here. Mm-hmm.
And it's been a while since I've been consistent with either of those things. Mm-hmm. In part because being alone with thoughts and feelings is scary.
Yep.
In part because it's difficult, or it has been difficult for me, to get into a good rhythm when I'm traveling. Because it's so easy when I'm on the road to justify
not showing up to it.
Getting up to write or to meditate or, you know, eating whatever the shitty airport food is instead of being mindful of bringing something or finding something. I would certainly like to get back into that. And actually, one thing that I've started that I have been doing pretty consistently that has been good is I've been keeping a gratitude journal.
Oh, I love a gratitude list, journal, whatever you got.
And I certainly don't think that it is a earth-shattering, you know, lightning from above. Mm-hmm. But it has been a subtle shift in, mm-hmm, I am by nature a glass half empty person. Like, oh. I know that about myself. And trying to consciously and intentionally see things more glass half full.
Right, because when you keep the journal, it puts you into this mindset of, like, well, I got to look for stuff to put in the journal.
Right. And I don't, like, I'm also on antidepressants and, mm-hmm, have worked through depression for many years. Like, I'm not suggesting, mm-mm, that simply thinking positive thoughts.
No, but it's a practice and it's a tool.
Circling back to shows specifically, I would approach from one of two angles. Mm-hmm. If there was a specific thought or question that I knew I wanted to explore, mm-hmm, I would start from there. So for example, in 2010, I was fired from a teaching job, a after school once a week theater for being trans.
Oh, really?
And over the months that followed, I realized that that was something that I wanted to, mm-hmm, create work out of and, mm-hmm, think about how we teach gender. Did I lose you?
It paused for a second, but I heard it is about how we teach gender.
And that was sort of coming from a thematic or topical approach. And so from that, I tried to write things about how I remembered learning what gender meant and where gender came from. What might gender look like in a different world where it's taught better? What might it look like in a world where it's taught even worse? Mm-hmm.
So it kind of comes from a place of curiosity.
Yes.
I love that. Yeah.
On the other hand, if I wasn't totally sure what I wanted to tie together some work, I would start by, and again, this was when I was writing more consistent or writing creatively more consistently, reading and reviewing the last, you know, couple months of what I'd been writing. And often there was some sort of theme that was clear, even if I hadn't been intending it.
Right.
Or I could start to piece things together of, oh, this chronologically followed and this sort of structurally followed from that. And oh, if I write something here in that gap to fill, maybe I need to do this. Mm-hmm. And that was more coming from starting with the writing and starting with, I don't know where this is going to go.
But following the thread.
Yeah, and following the thread from that direction.
So it's like curiosity and paying attention.
Yes.
That's your process.
That sounds a lot more coherent than it felt at the time.
It always does. Hindsight's always 20/20, man.
What are you doing to take care of yourself? You said bubble baths.
Oh.
I don't know that you said bubbles.
No, I don't have any bubble bath. Just baths. I love warm water. I have a bowl in my bathtub now that I use to pour warm water on my body to calm down my nervous system. It's very helpful. I have taken to reading erotica.
Great.
Again, I don't know why I stopped, but now that I've got all this time on my hands, I have been. And honestly, it's been a wonderful escape and it's kept me off the internet. So highly, highly recommend. Get your like dirty books. Read your stuff. So
you're having physical books of bound paper of erotica?
Kindle.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I can't go out and buy anything right now. Going outside. I go to my local cemetery, which is just
actually a really good idea. There are a couple nearby me.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's a pond in my cemetery next to my house.
Which cemetery? Where are you? Rosemary.
It's like the biggest cemetery in the state of Illinois.
Beautiful.
It's beautiful there. It's beautiful. There,
gorgeous.
And it's really peaceful, and that's been really like restorative. And I'm also working on a little creative project that popped up. It's funny because I hadn't been feeling very creative in the comedy realm for a while. Like I've been creating things in the coaching realm, like writing meditations and doing all of that. But like, I had this idea pop up. Oh, it was in the middle of the night. It was like 3 a.m. I was awake with anxiety. And I was like, oh my God, you know what I should do? I should do a news show that's just good news and do my BBC British accent. And so it's like just this deadpan delivery, but really good news, like real, true good news. So I'm working on that and getting that video together and maybe making it into a series. We'll see how people respond. And that has been very helpful because it like keeps my mind focused on something that's positive and something to be grateful for. Right. And, keeps my nose out of the internet and it keeps me in my present, which is my space is very like attuned to me and very calm and smells good. I like burn incense all the time. I'm gonna fucking meditate up in here. Like, so when I'm in that place, I'm able to stay really centered and kind of, you know, not get knocked askew by what's going on outside, which I'm very well aware of what's going on inside, but I can't consume it 24/7.
Yeah, I need to figure out how to cut back on my news consumption.
Turn off all your notifications on your phone.
That is a good start, and that I've done with a lot of apps. I could do it with a couple more. It makes me think of the summer where it looked like we might enter a nuclear war with North Korea. Which, like, remember that summer? those were the days.
Yeah, I've been thinking a lot about 9/11. This feels a lot about 9/11 did.
And there was finally a point where I actually asked a friend of mine, I was like, can you help me get off my phone? Like, I get one a day where I can look and get the updates. And other than that, either someone will tell me if the bombs are falling.
Right.
Or it won't matter to me because either they'll be too far away.
Right.
Or they'll be on me and then it's over anyway. And I sort of feel like that with this, where it's like, I've done the things I can. I'm staying home. I'm
exactly.
Socializing. I'm mindfully stocking up without hoarding or
right.
Mm-hmm. Like depleting. And it seems reasonable to say, yeah, like once, maybe twice a day I get an update. But other than
right.
that, it's not.
Yeah. I was definitely at the top of everything starting to happen. I was definitely spending like the first half an hour of the day in getting the Corona update, and then at night reading the Corona update, and I was not sleeping well and it was really fucking with my life. So I had to pull her back and I had to surrender, because it's like a form of being like, well, I can't control anything beyond this sphere. I can check in with my friends and my family, which I do, and vice versa. And I'm very grateful for that. But like, I can't do anything beyond staying home.
Right.
And, or support, you know, besides the thing, you know, there's things that people can do, but again, like showing up where I call it show up where you shine. So like comedy, getting people in a good mood, spreading joy, coming up with different ideas on how to like spend your time at home. Like that's what I'm good at. I can't sew a mask. I wish I could, but I can't. I'm not that good of a seamstress. So where can people find you?
Currently at home.
But a
cheap laugh, but I went for it.
I like it. I'm glad you did. We need laughs right now.
So I'm on the socials. I'm on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram as Rebecca Kling. Facebook and I think Twitter is at Rebecca Kling. Instagram is Rebecca_Kling.
Oh, okay.
My website is RebeccaKling.com.
Uh-huh.
And
people can book you, right? They can book your performance and skill sets and
possibly remotely at the moment.
Right. You got an internet connection.
As I think we talked about before we started recording, there were a number of speaking opportunities that I was trying to nail down,
mm-hmm.
all of which have been canceled. But unlike some of the people I know, including maybe someone who is on the other end of this call, I do have a full-time job right now, and I do mm-hmm. have, you know, the benefits and insurance and all of those things that suddenly become real nice when the world feels like it's collapsing.
Mm-hmm.
All of which is to say I'm trying to see glass half full, not glass
half full. Right. You're doing great.
So yes, RebeccaKling.com is where most of my stuff is, and you can go from there. And I was going to say something else. Oh, and if anyone is on Instagram and can tell me how to use it.
I can tell you.
I don't understand. I'm a millennial. I identify as a millennial, like culturally and like, yes.
I love it. Okay. Well, once we start recording, I'm going to help you.
Okay. But like, there are stories now and I don't
uh-huh.
know what that means. And like, a Facebook story is different than the Instagram stories.
I love it.
Why do all of my students want to just use text and none of them want email?
Oh, I don't like that either though. Like, send me an email because I can't keep up with the text.
Right?
I need you to send me an email if it's like work related and you want me to like perform an action around it. Yes. You send me an email.
Yes.
This podcast was set up through email.
Like, and kids today with their TikToks and their,
I actually really fucking, I'm down with TikTok.
And their TikTok, I think that there needs to be some sort of short video service. TikTok is owned by companies that are largely financed by the Chinese government and has some potential other issues. But yes. Mm-hmm. So I'm on the socials, RebeccaKling.com, but don't put me in an Instagram story because a friend of mine does that and says we're now fighting because I never respond.
I'll teach you when we get it, when we hang up. All right. So even though we're not in the same room, you still have to end the podcast by saying potty together. Okay. So on the count of three, 1, 2, 3.
Potty.
You did great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, that's it, folks. Episode music by Lynn and Bone at soundandpatternsmusic.com. Podcast art by Jessica Savage, editing and mixing by yours truly, and to find out more, visit lifeofthepotty.com. Thanks for listening, and as my dad would say, talk at you later.